The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Steve Grasso, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, nasty November selling, wiping out the S&P's gains for the year. But top technician Rob Slimer of Fundstrat has three stocks he's calling bargain buys. We'll get the names. Plus, Facebook shares rallying as CEO Mark Zuckerberg defends himself and his company. Is this a sign the worst could be behind the embattled social stock? But we start with the markets. The Dow erasing a 200-point gain today. As the Grinch comes early this year, the market's having the worst Thanksgiving week since 2011. The Dow and S&P 500 sitting in correction territory, down more than 9% from their highs. The NASDAQ down 14% from its high. Are there any hopes that a Santa rally can actually come and save the market? Guy.
I hate those campy things. And you knew when you
what?
Said it.
What's campy?
Campy. Santa Claus rally, right?
I
didn't say gobble, gobble.
Maybe
you
thought it.
Now,
you thought it.
Gobble.
And you,
company,
when you say it, there's a part of you that says yourself, I wish I wasn't saying Santa Claus rally, because I know you. Admit it.
That's
is it true?
It's a little true.
So are we going to have a Santa Claus rally, Guy?
Yeah. What's,
after all that?
What's the bottom line?
I think there is there's absolutely a chance. I mean, there's no question that you could see. Listen, the Fed backed off. They got a little more dovish. That's an encouraging sign, I think, for the bulls. Maybe President Trump and President Xi pull rabbit out of the hat and get a deal done over the next couple of weeks. That would be extraordinarily positive. I got to tell you, some of the rhetoric today sort of points towards maybe a deal getting done on November. What's the date we're looking for? November
30th
or so, whenever that meeting is. So there's clearly a
Friday. But we've seen the market bounce less. We see the market bounce less with every one of those headlines.
Today's action was lousy. I mean,
close on the lows.
Yeah, close on the lows.
But you need to test 2603 or 2532. I don't see fear or panic. I see fear. I don't see panic. You need panic.
You need the capitulation. Right now, we're in no man's land.
You have not had one of those days where everyone feels as if the world is coming to an end.
What about yesterday? Was down like six. Still didn't feel something in 10:30 or so.
Yeah, you still didn't feel that overwhelmingly panicky sell pressure in the market. It's almost where people say, all right, where does it end? Or where do I step in and buy it?
And we closed 200 points off the lows, too, yesterday.
Yes.
So that was...
Yeah, you know, no, you have to be disappointed by this. It's a light volume day. No one's paying attention. The bears went home, so there was no one left to sell. And I think Friday's going to look a lot like that, too. I think we have had a couple different data points also this week that have not been terribly good for the economy. I don't think the economy's falling off a cliff. I don't think the Fed has gotten particularly softer. I think expectations on the Fed have gotten softer. I think the Fed is going to do what they do. And I think, you know, based upon that, you know, we talked about 2011 was the last time we had this kind of, you know, this feels a lot like 2011, which also means that the first few days of November felt a lot like the first few days of September in 2011, when, in fact, people got so badly whipsawed. And then after a terrible August and a devastating August, we came into the end of the month, early September, you had a rally, and then people got destroyed before markets rallied in the first week of October. What was the metaphor or the things that tie those together is people were very concerned about growth back then. And I get the sense that people are more concerned about growth than they should be because of what's going on in China.
Powell definitely got a little softer, to Guy's point, couple days ago, or was it last week, with his
Powell didn't speak this week. You had New York Fed talking this week, reiterating what I think is, look, a message. I don't think the Fed is looking to step away from what they are doing. And I don't think that the Fed is ready to say that anything has changed for them. They are not going to follow the markets.
Right. I think you're talking about the Q&A that he had in Dallas.
Right.
This week he's
going
to
speak again.
Right.
And
this week.
If you look at basically the probability is only 71%. They usually like that in the 90s
for
it to confirm. Yeah.
Well, there's two parts of that, though. There's what are they going to do in December, which most likely raise. And then the bigger part, I think, is the rhetoric about what's happening in the economy and what the plan is for next year. that I think, that'll be important. But to me, it's still trade as the most important issue. I hope we see something constructive. I do not expect it to be resolved right around the 30th or whenever the meeting is over. This is a very complicated issue.
Sure.
So I think it would be very positive to see them back off the January 1 tariff hikes. Mm-hmm. That would be really important. I didn't love yesterday. Market's down a lot. It seems like they, Kudlow comes out to sort of calm the market down whenever it's down a lot. I don't love that, the reaction to the market all the time. However, this president has chosen to have the market as his barometer. And I think a trade deal would be the very best thing he could do, not just for the market, but I think for the economy, for businesses are starting to be nervous. They don't know what their costs are going to be. That's not a great position to be in.
It almost starts to feel, though, that trade doesn't have, where guys start off the show, it doesn't feel like you have that bang for your buck anymore with headlines.
Because we don't
Kudlow,
believe
we
it.
We didn't get it.
Because
right.
we don't believe it anymore.
In
yeah, but
right.
but even, I think it's going to be a process where if we get a bad deal, good word, a bad deal, I don't think that's enough. I think Trump always sets it up for, I want to have this really historic deal. I don't think it's going to be a historic deal. I think it's going to be a deal. And the market's going to see right through that.
Whatever deal he has, he'll say it's historic, regardless
right,
of what the deal is.
Right. And I don't think that's going to get us. At least, first of all, the calculus has changed.
Look, I think the bottom line here, folks, is that the market is contemplating that S&P earnings are not going to grow 7% next year, that equities have a lot of great news priced into them, that the tax cut was not a perennial event. Guy, when you're planting your flowers, you plant annuals and you plant perennials. Mm. I would argue that this is more of an annual planting, and I don't think you're going to get your hostas coming
so
up
like
next
year. It's like a tulip
spring.
As opposed
Guy
to
Dom.
Tulips are perennial. I mean, they come back every year.
Every year. Oh, they flower also every year.
Lily comes back every year.
That's right.
But there's some things that, they come and then
it's
they
a one-off.
You pull the sucker out and then you move on.
It's amazing that you knew this.
You know, I will say this. All the guidance we're seeing from a lot of these companies, I don't really think the Fed has anything to do with the lowered guidance. And maybe it has a little to do with the tariffs and they don't have visibility going forward. But to Tim's point, things are actually just slowing down. And maybe the market does go lower after 10 years of it going straight up.
You know what stood out to me? The price action in Apple. So Apple today, underperformed all the indices all day long, finished in the red. I mean, can you rally? Can you actually have any sort of convincing bounce, a hope for a convincing bounce, if you have Apple sitting out?
Well, I think that when you consider, again, the weight that Apple has, whether it's in the S&P, whether it has in the triple Qs, this is the problem. And I don't think we're seeing new money allocated into the market overall. And so when you have people selling, the good news here is that I just don't, the fund flows don't indicate that the ETF world has really started to give up hope. And in fact, that's great news. And I think the concern we have about an Apple is this is a stock for all seasons.
Don't you want to see
capital
return, I don't mean to interrupt
for
you, but
growth, for value players, you name it, and it's
don't
it's
you
failing.
Want to see the market give up hope, though, to form a real credible bounce or a
so
bottom?
So you want to see them throw in the towel on Apple.
I want to see them throw in the towel on Apple.
You could
make the case that, I was going to say, you could make the case that they've thrown in
the
towel on Apple, but I think you need to see that real flush, and I don't think we've seen it yet. So I want to see that flush because I don't think, to Tim's point, I don't think we've seen it yet.
But we're trying to find a neat little allegory for this. And I hear that, Steve. We've all looked at the recoveries that we've had. They've needed to have some crescendo and some big fallout. As we've said here, Apple's done 25% down in about 30 sessions. That's extraordinary. But the way I look at this is a slow bleed right now, and it includes problems in Europe. I'm going to continue to talk about Europe. I'm going to continue to talk about at least the dynamic on trade, the dynamic with the Fed. Those things aren't going to change
Apple's
between now and
year end. Apple's
still
4%. So to your point about a flush, it's up 4% year to date. The markets of the indices have given back.
Wait, so are you
all
saying that
profit.
You want to see Apple wipe out its gains?
Yeah,
for
I want to see
year?
It wipe out the gains. I want to see you got to see a flush. You can't tell me a stock has been flushed when it's still positive on the year. That's
why?
Not
why. That's such an
that
arbitrary date.
No. You got to see
down
a real.
25%.
There's people holding on Apple. Have you talked to people? Are they selling their Apple yet? I'm still long
but
Apple.
I bought Apple at 190 after the last round of earnings. As far as I'm concerned, it's been flushed. So, I mean, I
bought it at 190. Most people bought it a lot lower.
It doesn't matter what price you paid for it.
It's up 4%.
It is what it
There's
is
no
right
flush
now.
In Apple yet. People have not thrown in the towel with Apple. If Apple was thrown in the towel, you would see it.
What is the towel then? What is the price of the towel?
First of all, Apple was being bought as a value stock and as a growth stock.
Come on, Capon, in there, split them up.
As a value stock and a growth stock. So you need to see it be flushed now. People are still believing Apple
is the
savior.
I'm asking you, what price is a flush? I think down 25 is, flushy.
Still positive when the indexes are low, are flat.
to lower on the year.
Why is the why is it being up for the year?
why is it that we have to care about year-to-date performance?
Right.
Unless this is really about
a tax
against
Steve?
Everyone, is this everybody against Steve?
Here's the thing. Where are you in this?
I'm over on the left.
No.
Oh, where am I?
In this debate.
I knew it. Listen, I don't think necessarily that being up, down on the year, up. I mean, to me, a flush is when you see 3-4 times normal volume on a day where it makes it either a new all-time low or a new 52-week low, and we haven't seen that yet. When we see a 5 times normal volume day in Apple, then I'll say we've seen the flush. To Karen's point, though, it's a pretty significant move to the downside. Yeah. And if you've been waiting for this, the Apple story, and I don't think it's fundamentally changed. The way they are telling their story changed, but the Apple story itself hasn't.
All right. Well, one of Wall Street's biggest bulls says the bottom isn't in just yet. Tony Dwyer of Canaccord Genuity joins us now. Tony, one of the biggest bulls on Wall Street.
Yep. And
you're getting
scarcer until the yield curve inverts, and I bore you to death with that. I'm going to be bullish until the end of this cycle, well after the yield curve inverts. But let me answer the flush question. Mm-hmm. First of all, happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Thank you.
But the flush question is, the NASDAQ composite has down the 10-week rate of change, which is a good indicator on how, like, intermediate term oversold you are. The 10-week rate of change on the NASDAQ composite hit a minus, it's at a minus 12. When I look back outside of a secular bear market, a recession-driven secular bear market in 1973, you've had double-digit gains in the NASDAQ comp 6 and 12 months after that every time. So when I look back, what's a flush? I don't know if the bottom is in. I think the problem that we get into on Wall Street is we try and guess what the price is, what the exact pinpoint time it is. What I'm saying is whatever you, the indicators that I follow, unless you're in a recession-driven bear market, whatever you lose from here, you will make up very quickly on an intermediate term oversold bounce. We've called it, you know, this retesting process, the slop, pop and drop. And we're in the drop phase. We're in that retesting phase. So what are we've looked for signs of when you're out of that. And there's signs that do show up.
So in October, you had a price target year end of 3200.
Right.
Then you knocked it down to 2950. And more recently, you knocked it down to 2900.
No,
is that right?
2900 to 2950.
Okay.
And basically, to make it clear, that sounds like I'm turning bearish right at the low. And that's what happened was when you've had a 9% drop in the S&P 500, it takes a median 71 days to recoup that loss in a non-recession environment. So it's statistics. You guys know me. It's not emotion. It's data. And the data is when you have that kind of flush in the S&P 500, it takes more than 3 months to get it back. So by definition, that pushes you out. I think it's really important to kind of identify that at the peak, when we were on the show talking about an environment ripe for volatility, you had investors' intelligence bulls were at 61%. The VIX was at 11. Right. The S&P, my trusty stochastic indicator that we've weekly indicator we've used on here, was at 95. That was an environment where you want to say, hey, you're going to have a correction. You're ripe for it was worse than I thought it was, clearly. But now we've got investors' intelligence bulls at 39%, almost half. That's sure to come down again, given how great it is this week. Sarcasm. You've got the weekly stochastic already hit a near a historic low at 25 in the end of October, which is when we identified the bottoming process. So the VIX is above 20 for the bulk of the last month. You're in the opposite. You're ripe for a pop more than you are ripe for increased volatility from here.
Just quickly, which sectors do you want to be if you are a believer that there is this rise to 2950-ish?
Right. I've said I'm pretty good at being wrong. I've proved that with the financials. I've proved that with a couple of my sector calls. If you believe that the Fed is going to pause after the next rate hike or even after two more rate hikes, that would be a 1994 environment, the end of 94, when you almost inverted the curve, but you didn't. You went from good employment to a really slow economy, financials, industrials, tech, and
healthcare. Is that your belief when you set this price target, that your assumption is the Fed is going to hike in December and then pause?
Yes.
Okay. So right. Then what sector?
They don't need to. What they need to do, what happened in 1994, the only time that you've been able to do what the Fed's done and kept going without inverting the curve and causing a recession was 94. We're replicating that. As long as we do that, it doesn't matter if they do it one or two more times. It's the tone change that the guys were talking about.
Tony, thank you.
Thank you,
Happy
Mom.
Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much.
Gobble, gobble.
I was waiting for it.
Canaccord, continuity.
So I think my scenario is still the following. I still think the S&P trades down to 2530 or so, a level that Steve talked about. That's about 110 or so, 120 S&P points from here, and we bounce into year end. Now, next year, I get extraordinarily cautious for a lot of the reasons that Tony said. I just think it's going to happen a lot quicker.
Couple things. I mean, you know, what might turn if the Fed steps away, to answer Tony's question? Look, emerging markets just from the lows of October have outperformed the S&P by 7%. I'm not going to tell you to go out and buy emerging markets, although tactically I've said that at times. I said it after the midterms, and you're down about 2% on that trade. Not so good. But it's important to note that the things that were acting the poorest look exhausted, and that's actually not bad. So emerging markets, which seem to be at the center of this storm, since the U.S. started selling off, and we talked about this, U.S. versus the rest of the world.
Right.
Rest of the world, in terms of emerging markets, outperforming significantly from that point. Europe, not so much. DAX making new lows.
All right. And just quickly, would tech fall into that category? If the Fed hikes in December and pauses, does that rip?
I would think that it has to rip. That would rip. But I'd be a seller of rallies, not a buyer of dips at this point.
Okay. The sell-off putting three quarters of the S&P 500 in a correction or worse. But top technician Rob Slimer's three under-the-radar stocks, he says, are about to break out to the upside. He'll tell us what they are next. Plus, Facebook fights back, shares rallying as CEO Mark Zuckerberg defends himself in an interview last night. Could the tide finally be turning for the embattled social stock? And airline stocks soaring today as millions of Americans head to the airports for the long weekend. CNBC's Phil LeBeau is at Chicago O'Hare in the thick of it. It's pretty thin out there, Phil.
It's relatively calm, Melissa. What's the old saying? Less is more. We'll tell you why that formula is paying off for the airlines at the start of this holiday travel season when Fast Money returns after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Airlines flying high on this very busy travel day. Phil LeBeau is at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago with more on what's making those stocks soar. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Melissa, they've got three things going for them right now. That's what the airlines have in their favor. First of all, record Thanksgiving traffic. About 3 million people will fly today. A record 30.6 million are expected to fly over the entire Thanksgiving holiday weekend, if you will. There is also a smooth start to this holiday weekend. No major storms, no widespread cancellations. That's what the airlines need because they have more passengers than ever who are paying higher fees. And yes, that's good for revenue generation as well as slightly higher airfares. In addition, when you look at what's happening for the airlines, they need some momentum because as you look at the airline index, it's not doing terribly well. Jet fuel is down over the last couple of months. That's certainly helping. But in terms of the airline index, we're on track to see the worst year since 2015 for airline stocks. The one exception, Melissa, take a look at United. Now, admittedly, United had a rough 2017, so 2018 is making up for some of that, but also because they've been doing more to generate more revenue. That's been helping in terms of the margins as well, and that's why United, the best performing airline stock among the majors out there this year. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Phil, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving. Phil LeBeau at O'Hare International Airport. All right, so airlines, Tim, they've also helped, obviously, by the drop in oil prices.
Yeah, so I have to say that I think airlines, even before the drop in oil prices, although that's certainly helped, were actually quite defensive. And I would also argue that airlines have had a great year. In other words, if you look at the trading range on some of these, even Delta, you know, basically was trading around 50 bucks, has been trading up closer to 60. United has, as Phil pointed out, has been a great story. For the airlines, it's not about jet fuel. It's about discipline on supply, on the supply routes and how efficient they're going to be. And I think we are concerned about new capacity being brought online early in the year. They've been very disciplined in the last couple quarters. That's what I listen to.
Well, I'm along with Tim on the airlines. I disagree a little bit about the jet fuel thing. I mean, the capacity story has been for the most of the year. But when they released their earnings for the last quarter, oil was $73, right? It's $54 now. Oil is the second biggest expense they have by a very slim margin. So it's 25% of their costs. So you have that kind of move, and they're flying at capacity, right? And they get that kind of savings on jet fuel. Now, I know they're hedged, but that's an enormous move.
You look at the chart, there's an inverse relationship between jet fuel and the airline. So, yes, it's one of the tailwinds. I don't think you were saying that it wasn't a tailwind, but I think it's probably the biggest one in October.
Yes.
I think the jet fuel coming down as precipitous as it did, all these airlines ran at exactly the same time.
And the oil outlook for next year is getting cut on the street by a lot. I mean, J.P. Morgan, I was talking to the strategist there today on Power Lunch. His new forecast for 2019 year-end is $61 on WTI.
And we were,
I mean,
we were 85, so these guys have changed it dramatically.
Right.
And that's, frankly, I think that's confusing. I mean, what has changed so much in the last couple of weeks? Maybe for the average, you know, call it the tourist in the energy sector who doesn't really follow oil. Oil analysts aren't tourists. And how do you go from 85 to 65? Were you suddenly surprised that there was a million extra barrels on the market? Were you suddenly surprised that supply disruption fears or some alignment with U.S. Saudi?
They were surprised. They were surprised probably by those carve-outs, by the eight-country carve-outs. That increased, even though if it's 6 months, they were surprised by that. That was something that was different.
I would think most energy traders were also surprised, right? Everybody got caught off sides on this oil trade in the past couple months, at least.
I never predict oil well at all. But let me just say one more thing on the airlines. They did a fantastic job and their earnings were all good. They were able to cut costs even with oil sort of getting out of their, you know, out of where they had hedged to be, that those costs going up a lot. Still, they were able to offset those costs. Now they don't even have that headwind anymore. That's very good for the airline.
So I look at Tim real quick, and he's right. I mean, Delta, for example, this year since December, has traded from 50 to 60, back to 50, up to 60, and we're smack in the middle of it now. So I'm of the belief that until it sort of breaks that range one way or the other, you sort of stay away from it. But I'll say this quickly. Expedia, if you look at that, and I understand it's not specifically airlines, it sort of encapsulates a lot of different things. That stock's telling an entirely different story. I mean, that's been going down basically since the summer. So I just think the move recently in the airlines has been on people trying to get ahead of this energy move and hoping they'll sort of catch lightning in a bottle in the year end.
All right. Stocks are on sale as nearly half the S&P 500 sits in bear market territory. But one top technician has three names he says could be a major bargain right now. He will tell us what they are next. We are live at the Nasdaq Market Site in New York City's Times Square. Much more Fast Money right after this.
Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of brighter futures for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. The Dow erasing a 200-point gain today and adding to what has been a volatile ride for the markets over the last 2 months. The S&P is down around 10% from its high hit on September 21st, and more than 70% of those stocks are in a correction territory. But if you are looking for a bargain, our next guest has three stocks he says could break out into year-end. So let's go off the charts with Rob Slimer of Fundstrat Global Advisors at the Plasma. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Melissa. So let's take a look at the S&P as a start. It's still in a very tentative situation, whether it's bottoming or not. A lot of debate here whether this is a retest or not. I actually think it is, but there's a tremendous amount of debate, and there's not a lot of extremely strong technical evidence to say this is the bottom yet. There's a few things that are starting to happen. We're starting to see this RSI data positively diverge. That means we're getting higher lows developing as the market comes back and retests those lows. That's marginally encouraging. And then we see things happening outside of the S&P 500. We see things happening in China. We see the 10-year bond yield peaking. So on the margin, we think things are starting to improve here. And we do have a few stocks I think look completely bombed out that look timely. The market itself, there's a tremendous amount of resistance here around 2,800. So that debate on the market, I think, continues well into December. My view, my opinion, my guess here is that it's going to hold, certainly going into the G20, and then we recover into year end. But let's take a look at some ideas that have a stronger technical setup. So the home builders, they've been a disaster for much of 2018. I think 10-year bond yields have rallied back to the upper end of their secular downtrend, the downtrend that started in 2018, and are starting to peak. And the home builders, have come down a very long way. If we look at that resistance band all the way back through 2013, 14, 15, and it's come right back to the 200-week, we love the 200-week as a long-term support level, and we think it's going to turn. We think they're relatively washed out. The risk-reward is to the upside, certainly through year-end and into the first quarter, so we think there's a seasonal bounce there. Now, where else? This is going to be a little bit of a tough stock to look at, BlackRock. Who wants to own an asset manager in this environment? But again, similar to what we saw with Pulte, this is a stock that's been in a correction for a year. So it's not as though it's just breaking like technology. This is already 12 months or 10 months into the correction. And when we look at this momentum data, this 14-week RSI, that's a pretty deeply oversold level. Last time we saw that was back in the beginning of 2016. So again, names that have come down for an awfully long time, for a year or so, look like they're long-term support of the 200-week moving average. Pretty timely. I like the risk-reward going into year-end, despite the fact that it's an asset manager and all our concerns with passive versus active. And the last one here is AMAT. So Applied Materials began to peak early at the beginning of 2018, and the relative performance versus the 500 started to roll over. But here again, back to the 200-week, you've done a lot of damage. That weekly momentum, that weekly RSI is almost as oversold as we saw at the beginning of 2016. I think these three names on a risk-reward basis are pretty positive going into year-end, into the first quarter. I think there's a good seasonal bounce coming into those stocks.
All right, Rob, come on over. Stephanie will bring the chair over. Thanks, Beth.
Thank you.
So, Rob, we were having a pretty fierce debate. Not sure if it was really a debate because it was basically everyone against Steve.
Yeah.
But
even though we're
here's
all
the question. Here's the question. I mean, is Apple, does it look like Apple has flushed? And can the markets actually bounce if Apple sits it out?
All right, so I heard the debate. So if we're talking about the flush as in what we saw in 2007, 2008, 2009, you're nowhere near there. But I don't think that's the kind of correction we're looking at. I think we're looking at a correction that is more of a cyclical unwind. Apple's getting pretty close. Can I definitively say that's the bottom? No, but I think you're pretty close. I'd be a better buyer here into year end than a seller down at these levels.
You just think that we chopped enough wood to the downside at this point?
It's pretty.
Yeah, we're using some great terms tonight. Yeah.
It's pretty oversold on a short-term basis.
But when you really look at the technicals on the market as a whole, I trade them as little grains of sand within the overall market. When you see that the market is flattened to the point of the flush, you sort of need all those heavy lifters. Amazon is still up 28% year-to-date. So the conversation of why does year-to-date matter? Because you still have a lot of fat to trim from people who have not thrown in the towel.
Well, lots of people bought stocks back in 16 and 17 and 18, right? So the year-to-date discussion, it's debatable, as you guys have just had that debate.
As we debated,
I'm actually not convinced it matters that much. I think it's more in that last recent run that we had in Apple, right? So that little pause that we had in the fall where it took off, that's all been unwound. And we see that in a lot of, I mean, think about some of the other technology stocks. Facebook, for example. I'm not a big bull on Facebook, but it's down at the 200-week. We've already crushed an awful lot of technology stocks. NVIDIA's fallen apart. Is it the bottom? I'm not convinced we're there yet on NVIDIA, but you have taken a lot of heavy-duty tech stocks down hard. I think the risk-reward into year-end for the market and a lot of these names is to the upside.
Can I make a quick comment on one of Rob's three names?
Yes, that would be welcome.
Thank you. AMAT stands out to me. Now, AMAT's basically been cut in half from the beginning of the year. It was a $65 stock, trading $35 now, give or take. Just reported their fourth quarter, which I thought was very good, but first quarter guidance was miserable. They took the stock out to the woodshed. I think we
another one. The metaphor is this segment, four total so far.
But if you look at it, you had a huge volume day. You wonder how much is in this. And I get semi-equipment's been grim death. But you say to yourself, how much is in the stock? I think most of it is now. And even when analysts took down their prices en masse, they took them down to the 50s. And this is a $35 stock. So I think the risk reward in an AMAT looks pretty interesting.
Well, I mean, a name like BlackRock has been kind of left out in the cold, so to speak, in a world where you have the dynamic of lower fees and expectations, actually, that earnings have been stagnating here. So, you know, the chart to me reflects the business model. This is not a company that's about to fall off a cliff, by the way. This is one of the biggest money managers in the world at a time when the world's wealth management industry is very healthy. It pays you a 3.5% dividend. But let's face it, these guys made almost $30 a share in 2017. They're going to make around 29 and change, and they may go down to 28 next year. fees are compressing in this industry, and I think that's something people are going to continue to push down on the multiple.
Yeah. Karen, you like any of the names that Rob pitched?
I thought Pool 2 was actually the most interesting. I mean,
we need a metaphor, though.
We need a metaphor.
Something.
It's in the house.
Touche. No, it seems, I mean, there's so much negativity surrounding the whole space, right? And I think that rates was part of it. Rates have reversed. I don't know if that is the impetus to get people to buy a house now. I don't know. We'll see. But, I mean, it's not reflecting a lot of optimism at this point.
None of them are. And they're all down into very heavy-duty support from my standpoint. 200-week moving average is great support.
You said 200-week. On here, we have 200-day. Is that wrong?
I think it's 200-week, actually. It's a weekly chart.
Okay.
And I think rates are stalling out. I don't think
right. Rates and lumber prices have come in by 40% or so. So you have a good foundation.
Ah, nice.
If you want to buy the home building.
It's like the eighth metaphor / simile this segment, and we're only 4 minutes in or so. You want to toss one in?
Actually, no. What I'd like to do is there are a bunch of people watching this show. I just got the Dublin Pub in Morristown. The place is packed. They have a huge TV screen on, and they're watching Fast Money. So I'm just saying this is their pre-holiday party, and they're Fast Money fans. So hi to the folks at the Dublin Pub in Morristown.
Hello, Dublin Pub.
Wow.
Hello.
We're doing that these days.
Yeah. see who we say hi to next. Rob, thank you.
Thank
Rob
you.
Slimer of Funstrut. Happy hump day. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg standing his ground amid all the controversy surrounding his company. We'll hear from him and debate whether it's safe to buy the stock, which is now down 35% since July. Plus, cannabis retailers bracing for what will be the first holiday where sales are legal in many states. But there's something else on the horizon that could give pot stocks a boost. We'll tell you what that is when Fast Money comes right back.
So you are not stepping down as chairman.
That's not the plan.
That's not the plan. Would anything change that?
I mean, like eventually over time. I mean, I'm not gonna be doing this forever. But I'm not currently thinking that makes sense.
That was Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg standing his ground on CNN last night amid the controversy surrounding the company. But it's not just Zuckerberg who's been fighting back. The stock has actually rallied in the past 2 days, even as the broader market saw red. So could this mean the worst is over for the company? Karen.
Yes. Well, I hope so, because I am long the stock. Kudos to Tim, who's been, I think, writing a lot of editorials
on this topic for months now.
Right. But yes. I think Mark Zuckerberg is the right person to lead them out of this. And when I think about other CEOs that have been able to, you know, really take some punches but turn around, Oscar Munoz, if it was only 10 or 11 months ago, we were all pretty negative on Oscar Munoz and his ability to lead United Airlines. Mm-hmm. He turned it around. Steve Jobs, the most famous probably, right? Left the company, came back, and now look at Apple, 160, could have been 230, but whatever. And then Howard Schultz. So I think this kind of founder CEO, not Oscar Munoz, but is really important to the business. Plus, you can't vote him out, right? He owns Zuckerberg.
You're
you can't vote him out. This is a real board, though, right? They don't have some, it's not a Tesla kind of board that Musk controls. This is a real board. I know you've got Ken Chenault and Erskine Bowles and Susan Desmond Hellman. This is a real board. So I would be very, very, very concerned if they kicked him out. Very. I don't think that should happen at all. I like that the stock has rallied in the last 2 days. The valuation is very cheap. I think earnings will come down for sure, but that's in there.
Mark Zuckerberg may be the CEO and may be there forever because there's the voting share structure. But are these comparisons really comparable? Only because right now the company is facing potential legislation or regulation that would change the way
their core business runs.
Their core business operates. So let's say Starbucks, you know, for some reason, lawmakers were infuriated by how they brewed their coffee and said, you got to do this X, Y, and Z to, you know, to make sure that the caffeine content is not too high or whatever. I mean, doesn't that sort of change? That would change the model somewhat.
We're
at a moment where you're thinking, is the model going to change?
The model could change, right? That could happen. I mean, we think about Microsoft facing a multi-year antitrust. The model could change here. This is not a crazy price for this business, even if it is chopped up. I don't even know exactly what the best way to do that would be. But, you know, the multiple is not high. The cash is enormous. The business is still a very solid business. I understand the margins are coming down, but there's still significant margins here. So
you know, but you wonder when crisis management. I mean, this stock is crashed effectively. I mean, if you look at, we can say what we want, but it was a $205 stock 6 months ago. It's trading $137 now. That's a pretty significant move. And then when you have the Mark Benioffs of the world calling it, basically making a comparison to nicotine, that's a real problem. So I don't think Mr. Zuckerberg's made himself a lot of friends, and I think people are coming out of the woodwork now to take shots.
I just think that this, look, this is a crisis of trust, and I think it's, you know, here's, let me say something positive about Facebook. They're not alone. But I do think that Facebook, whose core product is being held into question, is being singled out the most, and I think they should be. When I consider corporate governance and I think about how people should be thinking about a stock whose core product has been at risk this entire time and they haven't disclosed that to us, I think this company deserves a bigger beating. I think also investors need to start evaluating companies and have a different investment metric in their toolbox to be assessing cyber risk at companies, especially technology companies.
Technically, support in the stock is about 20% lower. Mm-hmm. So if this continues and we start to see fundamentals match up with technicals, you're looking at a couple of year ago support levels, which is a little bit lower from here.
Well, options traders are putting their faith in a comeback rally for Facebook. Mike Coe's in San Francisco to break down the action for us. Hey, Mike.
Hi there. Yeah, so we have seen a lot of skepticism in the options market for Facebook, and the options prices are still implying quite a lot of volatility in the coming weeks and months. However, I would point out that today we did see bullish bets outpace bearish ones by about 3-2. Bullish bets include buyers of calls and sellers of previously purchased puts who are taking profits on their bearish bets. We did see a lot of that activity today as well. One of the trades that stuck out to me, which is really a short-term speculative bet that the stock could have a bounce this coming week, was purchasers of the November 30th weekly 142 strike calls. So those are the 142 strike calls that are going to expire a week from this coming Friday. They were spending about 80 cents for those. Those have about a 15% chance of expiring in the money. So it's a low probability bet, but they're not risking a great deal, 80 cents a share, to make a bet that the stock could pop. And let's bear in mind that it was significantly above that 142 strike price only very recently.
All right, Mike, thanks for
The weather in San Francisco looks a lot like the trading in Facebook. It looks awful out there, Mike. I mean, kind of dreary, huh?
That was.
It's a little bit gray, but it's not nearly as smoky. So we're very happy about that.
Yes.
Yes, it's true.
Good progress on that. All right, Mike, thank you. Mike Coe in San Francisco. We're off this Friday,
what?
By the way.
Oh, man.
So you can pop in an oldie into the VCR like Guy will do. But be back here next Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time for a brand new fresh edition of Options Action. You can always get us online to cnbc.com/optionsaction. Ready, set, shop. The retail stocks, the group has been taking a beating lately, but our traders will tell you which names they think could see a big year-end rally. Plus, a number of key bills next week could spark a rally for the pot stocks. We will explain. More Fast Money just 2 minutes away. Welcome back to Fast Money. Can Black Friday boost retail out of the red? Retail is higher today after posting 8 straight days of losses. That was the group's longest losing streak ever. Courtney Reagan joins us from a Kohl's in New Jersey with more on that, on what investors and shoppers can expect. Hey, Court.
Well, the XRT retail ETF is down around 14% over the last 3 months, Melissa, well underperforming the broader market. Investors are starting to worry that the retail strength that began last holiday season has run its course. But retail CEOs are confident that the holiday season will be strong, and their attention is focused on this first big weekend. As it should be, Deloitte expects that 70% of Americans will shop at some point in some way this weekend between Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday. And less than 24 hours from now, those Black Friday sales will be underway in most retailers' stores, even sooner online. Here at Kohl's, doorbusters start at 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving, and doors will stay open until midnight on Black Friday. Now, inventory management is the most important part of the Black Friday planning process. Getting the right products, priced right, and at the right quantity distributed to stores and fulfillment centers, that takes about a year to figure out. Seasonal workers have been trained, and they're going to get their first big test tomorrow. Websites get battle-tested as well to prepare to handle the traffic spike. Macy CEO Jeff Gannett told me this year his website is ready. He doesn't believe they'll run into those same checkout snafus that happened last year on Black Friday, a difficult day to experience trouble like that. Back to you, Melissa.
All right, Courtney, thank you. Courtney Reagan at Kohl's. So with so many retail stocks deep in the red, we thought this would be a great time to play
a game.
A confusing game.
That's right, a confusing game, otherwise known as Shop It or Drop It. And since Guy is here tonight, we will explain exactly how this game works. I will say a stock such as Best Buy, and if you like the name, you say Shop It, and you will see this. If you think it is a pass, a sell, you don't want to own it, you say Drop It, and you'll see this. All right, great. Got it?
Got it. How you doing right now?
All
right.
Do I have to go first?
Yes, and we'll actually use the Best Buy example that we just walked through. It is down 25% in the last 3 months. Do you Shop It or Drop It?
You know, as Karen and Tim C were saying in the
break, he doesn't know how to play.
I don't know how to play the game. In baseball, in sports, if you're shopping a player, you're trying to get rid of that player.
Same for companies.
Same for companies. You're shopping
your company.
But not on Fast Money.
Not on Fast Money. So Shop It means something I would want to
buy. You put it in your bag and take home with you.
Like Amazon, your shopping cart.
Add to cart.
Add to cart.
Yes.
Drop It means get rid of it.
Yes.
Best Buy.
Okay.
Drop it. And you're going to say, wait a second, Guy, this thing, valuation is very reasonable. The stock has gotten obliterated. It seems to have some sort of a capitulatory bottom. Comps were good. All those things are true. But let me say this. You look at their merchandise inventory last quarter was up 23% against extraordinarily paltry sales growth. And it says to me, margins in the next quarter, unless they knock the cover off the ball, which I don't think they're going to do, are going to really be tested. So I think this has a very good chance to see levels we last saw in, I don't know, September of last year-ish, $55.
See, I don't agree with that at all, despite the fact, obviously, Guy's not going to be running in for a floor buster at Best Buy.
No.
I would actually be shopping this stock. And look, they're the last man standing in this place. The free cash flow of this company has been now proven. They're buying back $1.5 billion of stock a year. I think the comps for last year are the biggest issue here. They were up 9% fourth quarter last year. That's what people are going to be looking at as the bar. But Best Buy, even though Guy is no longer showcasing, I believe is what he sat in those couches all afternoon on a Sunday.
That's
and
what Mel
football.
Does. I don't do that.
You've said on air you've done.
She's very
defensive.
You have said on air that you
go
to places
Best Buy
and
I look,
and then, go
and then I go online and I get the best price.
She's hanging out on a leather couch all afternoon,
isn't it?
Like you do.
No, I do. I like
it. I don't sit there in a recliner using the TV all afternoon and then go home.
I'm old.
Moving on here, right. Tiffany, down 22% over the last 3 months. Shop It or Drop It, Timothy.
I tell you what, I'm going to shop this one. And not only, hopefully the blue box will show up at my house this Christmas, but the bottom line here is this is a company also that's growing kind of high single digits in terms of their global sales. The U.S. same store sales are actually but what they're doing around the world is working for them. They're also freshening up the brand with Tiffany True and whatnot. I think they're becoming more relevant to the young folks. I'm shopping.
Well, what about, though, you love to talk about the dollar, the strength of the dollar, strength of dollar. They have half of their business outside of the United States. A little more, actually.
Yeah, well, I don't, first of all, to be consistent with that, I don't think that the dollar is a runaway train here. And if anything, I believe the dollar is probably range-bound. Therefore, I think some of these headwinds and the guidance on FX may actually have a chance to be a tailwind if it reverses.
All right, next stock, Target taking 17%. Shop It or Drop It, Karen?
Yeah, Shop It. I thought that was just so overdone. I mean, you know, this is a company that is successfully investing dollars to grow their business, right? I don't know why they got so punished for it. Also, it wasn't like it was a super high flyer stock. That I thought that was a complete overreaction. You know, the three-day rule, so Friday's a short haul, Monday will be the third day. I'm looking to buy this one. I think management's doing the right
stuff.
Don't you
think they got ahead of their skis, though, when you have the CEO saying it's the best environment ever that he's seen for the consumer, and then you see the stock just take off?
They just did a face plant on their skis.
Yeah, it's been a winner.
Metaphors.
But you would think that going into year-end, you've had a number of retail companies warn going to year-end about the holiday season. I would think that you would, what am I doing? I would drop it on this one. Not shop it.
Why is it so confusing? The Drop It bag is red.
It's not.
Shop
It's a little
bag
confused.
Is green.
It's not. It's
last
a little
but not
confusing.
Least, Macy's down 14%. Shop It or Drop It, Grasso.
So Macy's reported they beat on sales and they beat on earnings. They raise full year guidance and the stock gets hit. This is not a fundamental story. This is an environment for the shopper, for the consumer. I would drop it.
All right. Still ahead.
All right.
It's like a delayed reaction. Are pot stocks heading higher for the holidays?
We'll tell you why.
Next week could give more marijuana companies the green light to move into the U.S. More Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Pot stocks lighting up across the board today, and a slate of possible new bills next week could send them even higher. Aditi Roy's in San Francisco with the details. Hey, Aditi.
Hey there, Melissa. We are at a dispensary here in San Francisco, and this is the first year that California is entering the holiday season as a legal recreational state. And soon, New Jersey could be one step closer to legalizing recreational marijuana before the end of the year. And that's because a whole slate of marijuana bills, including one that would legalize recreational marijuana, just got the green light for a committee hearing on Monday. That's a joint committee between the Senate and the Assembly in New Jersey. Now, if it clears that committee, it means it would go to a floor vote for each house. That could come as early as December. And if the governor of New Jersey signs off on the bills, which he has indicated that he is in support of legalizing recreational marijuana, that means the state could become a legal recreational state by the end of the year. Let's take a closer look at some of these bills. One would legalize recreational marijuana in New Jersey. One would expand the state's medical marijuana program by easing restrictions and would also create a cannabis regulatory commission. And another bill would expunge some marijuana convictions from criminal records. And aid to one of the lawmakers behind these bills tells me that this has been a long time coming, about 1 or 2 years that they've been discussing this and debating this. Meantime, we saw a lot of the major cannabis stocks lighting up, as you mentioned, Aurora, Cronos, Canopy Growth, Tilray, all in the green, making up some of the ground that they lost after Canadian legalization last month. Back to you guys.
All right, Aditi, thank you. Aditi Roy in San Francisco. Let's go to our very own pot expert, Tim Seymour, who is long a number of stocks. He also sits on the boards for three stocks. For all of his disclosures, go to fast.cnbc.com for all of them. So
a nice green shirt on Aditi. Also talking about other legislative, you got the farm bill coming through, which probably makes hemp fully legal finally. And that's going to mean kind of a land grab for some of the big national players, a Curaleaf, for example, Charlotte's Web already out there. They're in this space. But essentially, without getting too deep into this, hemp essentially with low THC content actually will be different than cannabis, CBD oil. And this is something that really extends the consumer products, the wellness
that's
trade.
That's the farm bill as
that's
opposed
the
to the New Jersey
bill,
bills that are
which
being
suddenly
considered
you've
on
gotten
Monday.
Momentum
okay.
on. Very exciting.
Final trades up next. Final trade, Tim.
Best Buy guy.
Karen.
Sell some Foot Locker calls in this big bump.
Steve.
Buy match.
Steve.
Alabody, 80 years old, in the hospital, watching a show. Get better. Amen.
Nice.
Yes. Speedy recovery. See you back here Friday. No, Monday at 5. Bad Money
happy
starts
Thanksgiving.
Now.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.